So happy it's Thursday. Welcome, ESPN 1700 AM. It's the Real Estate Radio Hour with your host,
David McKelvin,
and myself, Ryan White. Our past shows you can find on our website, pricelesshome.com, or the newly acquired therealestateradiohour.com, YouTube, or also iTunes. They're all there. Plenty of content to fill up your day. I listen to them in the morning, going to the gym. It keeps me awake, I suppose. Focus of today's show is the financial market versus the real estate market. And we've got Reed Matthews in here, financial advisor, first VP of investments with Wells Fargo Advisors. Thanks, Reed. How you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me, Ryan.
Also, Randy Starrett, ex-B of A, ex-Fannie Mae, ex-asset manager, switch teams. Now you're buying properties for Aslan, acquisitions manager over there at Aslan, but still the bad guy.
I can't win, man.
Still the bad guy.
Yeah,
hey,
that's
what it is. That's right.
We're going to go through exactly why Randy is still the bad guy a little bit later.
He's a friend to the seller.
Yes,
the
friend
to the buyer. Right.
Okay, here we are. Home sales see uncommon rise.
Oh, yeah.
13% monthly jump in inventory sold. So that is from September to October. 13% more sold. What's going on, Randy? Aslan buys up everything?
I would like that. I get paid on it, but yeah. It's not just us that's doing it. That's just the way the market is trending because there's so little inventory that it's going that direction with it. So it just happens that way.
So Randy's background, he is buying properties with Aslan's money. That's your job. Go out and acquire properties, and you guys are rehabbing them and putting them back on the market.
See, that's why I don't think we're the bad guys. I mean, the whole intent is to have us sell the properties so that we're getting them in the good condition to these new buyers to help the market increase the equity in the houses. So if in some instances with banks have it, they don't rehab it, so therefore the investors are getting them at a lower value, then that decreases the values of the neighborhood. Whereas if we're selling them at a higher value with a little inventory that's there, it becomes a more recent comp and therefore helps the equities in the property. So we're not bad guys.
Well, there's no doubt that the real estate market is a very competitive market right now. And, in fact, what you're really saying is that you're buying inventory, but you're returning it to the market. So your influence in the market is a positive thing, except for the buyers that are out there trying to take advantage of some of the lower homes because you guys are coming out there with a lot of cash. So it's just a very competitive market.
Everything's competitive. It's not just this. Everything is in general. The banks tend to, especially with the REOs, before they hit the market, they've already rehabbed it. So they've invested that because they want the owner occupants. They want to cater to them. Most banks are doing that right now in our area, and so
one would also think they want a pretty good return on their investment.
Yeah, I mean they do, but my point is those are targeted for the owner occupants versus the investors like me, because I'm wanting to get the lower value of it and rehab it and make my money on the other end. They've already done all that. They want it to go to FHA, which is he does. So those are going to have the higher values of it.
So this month, I guess we're talking October, 3,622 homes sold here in San Diego as compared to just over 3,000 in September. And this is interesting because usually as we go into the holidays, transactions dwindle. You know, it actually usually slows down. People have, daylight savings time. You know, when you leave work at 5 or 5:30, it's dark. There's no views to be seen when it's dark. Right. And, of course, there's football. That takes up all day Sunday. And if you watch college, there's Saturday, Monday and Thursday. And, you know, I mean, you still got to shop for Christmas presents. You got to get a turkey. You got a Christmas tree. All kinds of things get in the way. So we usually see a dip in transactions. But really noteworthy, it's coming up.
Yeah, I mean, that's good because that means that there's the buyers out there that, you know, there's the improvement of the market, the improvement of the job. So there's people out there buying the properties, which is good for everyone, which is what we want. We don't want to have properties sitting on the market and then they having to do these reductions, and therefore it's lowering the values of it. So it's good that they're moving fast and not staying on the market.
Now, just I kind of threw Randy under the bus here when we started, but really – Aslan is doing about 50 a month they're buying, which to most of us, that's an ungodly number. I mean, that's a crazy number, but really it's 1.5% of the total sale. So, okay, it's not completely your fault, but Aslan's gobbling up a good amount, as many as they can get their hands on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do all different kinds of not only the short sales and REOs, but we also do the auctions, trustee sales. So we got our hands in a lot, which is what we want. That's why we're the largest in the Southern California.
Are you focusing intently on Southern California? Because I've heard a lot of asset management companies or hedge fund companies moving to Texas. Is that something you're seeing?
We cover our backyard, which is L.A. down to here. I have influence in Arizona and Nevada, but I don't really focus on that. My area is right around here, mm-hmm. and that's where we all are as a whole, Aslan is.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, you know, we're down 50% year over year on the inventory right now. So with interest rates as low as they are, it's not hard to see why the market's coming up. I mean, there's mm-hmm. multiple offers on properties, downright difficult in a lot of cases to get the buyers in houses. What kind of effect is that having on your company as an overall big picture?
I mean, nothing really other than we're seeing the same offers on our end from when we hit the market. The buyers are there, which is good. I mean, that's what we're all wanting. We're wanting to see that, so get the equity back on the houses. That's what we all want.
Are you finding problems with appraisals right now?
No.
Really?
No. When we're selling, we're hitting the market at, That's what my job is to see the whole, all the comps, whether they're listed or they're sold, to get a value of what the property is. So when I hit the market, based on what my cost is for rehabbing it, the holding cost of for those days, if I need to do a cash for keys, whatever the costs are in, I've got a pretty good accurate number for when I hit the market, what it's going to list at, and what it's going to appraise and sell at. And so far we've been really good for the most part. Then when we sell them, they're appraising for it.
It's important.
Yeah.
That's really important.
Yeah, I think on my side of things, one of the best performing sectors in the market this year has been the home builders. If you look at their performance, you know, different home builders, the Lennars, KB Homes, et cetera, things like that, that sector has been extremely hot from an investment standpoint, but there's a reason behind it. If you look at the number of houses that have been being built over the last, really starting in 2005, it hasn't been keeping up with the traditional number of homes that are needed to be built every single year in the country. It's been far below that, really trending, you know, 50, 60, 70% below what the normal trend of building new homes. And so that's been, you know, tied to their performance because they're selling new homes and the demand is real. It's there and there's buyers available.
Well, yeah, Bill Davidson was quoted in the San Diego Union Tribune by suggesting that he's very comfortable with actually coming out with new construction. In fact, I think he's said to build about 75 homes. Oh, 64 home lots in La Costa are coming.
So Davidson Homes.
Davidson
Mr.
Homes,
Davidson.
That's right. Right. They're coming out and saying, yeah, we're actually building again. It's a good sign.
Yeah, and if you look at where interest rates are at right now, I think there's been a lot of people that have sat on the sidelines and said, yeah, there's cheap money. But then what difference does it make if I save $300 on my mortgage every month if my property value is falling? You guys are probably seeing that,
mm-hmm.
right? Well, finally, we have some stability out there, and so those buyers that have been waiting a long period of time, they're coming out of the woodwork, and they're saying the time is right now because they've seen at least a period of time, more than just 1 month to the next, where prices have stabilized, and there's still very, very easy, cheap money out there to be had for people that are looking to buy a new property.
It's really an interesting concept to start investing in builders again. There was a time they were toxic.
Oh,
absolutely.
That is really interesting.
Like banks.
Well, yeah, like banks, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, that's usually right. What people sometimes miss is that you usually want to invest when things are toxic, you know. unfortunately, it's really hard to do. But, you know, from the home builders, they kind of snuck up on me seeing that sector really outperform this year and do as well as it has. It's been pretty tremendous in terms of the total return there. And there's good reason behind it. It's not just speculation. They're putting up numbers and they're selling a lot of new homes and they're getting – good prices for them. They're not giving them away anymore.
It lands cheap now. Now it lands cheap. You know, there's less competition, sure.
Yeah, a lot of those companies also had lots of cash on their balance sheets before the whole crisis hit. Mm-hmm. Not all of them, but a lot of them did. And they were able to take advantage of all sorts of distress types of properties,
sure.
and land deals, and all sorts of things, and even buying up distressed mortgages and things like that, which have actually helped them quite a bit. Some of these companies are making a lot of their money not on actually selling new homes, but on some of the things they did when things were really, really difficult.
Fixing broken projects, continuing on.
Some of that, and you know, buying just like what you're doing, a lot of distressed assets out there,
right.
and they're being rewarded for taking on that risk when no one else really wanted to.
Does Aslan do any new construction or strictly cosmetic-ish stuff, right? Cosmetic.
No, we got our start in a lot of this doing the large, like, apartment complexes and redoing all those. But we've transitioned, and mostly we're doing, like, you know, short sales, the REOs, and the single-family. We can do up to, like 8 units, 4 units, do those kind as well, too.
I see.
Is it okay to say exactly how much you're in charge of in terms of purchasing power in the county? Well, is it something like $150 million?
We have about $100 million in that we have as cash flow from investors, hedge funds, and that we use to purchase the properties on any given time.
And you're looking to turn that every 6 months?
Yeah, use it over based on how much time it takes for the rehab it, but we've got our margin that we try to do, and we try to stick to it. That's how we value and do our numbers. In terms of
purchasing. Okay, so here's what I'm getting to. So, Randy Sterrett, you're in charge of $100 million. You're in charge of making sure that the company makes money when they buy and sell property. Where do you see the San Diego County real estate economy going right now?
He just said, even though he says I'm a bad guy, but it seems to me like it's going pretty good. It's going up. That's what we're wanting. We're wanting to see the positives of the properties selling and then, you know, increasing in the values. Properties actually appraising versus when in the past few years where they weren't appraising. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I want to see it go up. And that's one of the reasons that I enjoy what this is because I help get the equity up there again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I have a list of Aslan's, let's say, pre-listed, not on the market properties that are in the renovation stage, not released to the public yet. You sent this to me, Randy. Thank you very much. We're going to make it available to our listeners. 888-551-2593. Again, 888-551-2593. That's the number. Call. Leave your email address. I'll get you on the list. As new ones come out, we'll get sent out. You get first look at Aslan's inventory. There's usually about 50 scattered all over San Diego County that they're in the process of renovating. Seems like a really good way to go. In this inventory shortage list, they interviewed a couple, Brian Standing and one other gentleman, Derek Sparhawk. I hit you both up on Facebook. You guys said you put in 80 to 100 offers trying to get one of these. Here's the solution, man. The inside track with Aslan. Give me a call, 888-551-2593, 888-551-2593. When we come back, Reed Matthews. He's going to scare the you-know-what out of us when he tells us how much money we should be putting away to save for our children's college education when we come back. We are back. ESPN 1700 AM. It's the Real Estate Radio Hour with your host,
David McKelvin,
and myself, Ryan White. Randy, good to have you here. Try a little bit easier on you for the rest of the show. He's a pretty good guy. Pretty good guy. He's got a tattoo or two, spiky hair. Not what you'd expect for an asset manager. Certainly not what I suspected.
You say that all the time.
I know,
what
I
is it
time.
You expect an asset manager?
A tie. I don't know. Not a beard.
Oh, okay.
Not a book about horsemen and death.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, you're out there to buck the stereotype, right?
You'd be surprised what asset managers look like.
Okay, good enough.
The perception that you have of us, but really, you know, we're just tattoos and spiky hair.
Just tattoos and spiky hair. Good enough. All right, Reed. I got a little one.
I got two of them. I got two of them.
Two. Reed, you got one.
I have one, yeah.
We all have kids. At some point, we hope they go to college. And they got to go somewhere. 18. They're going somewhere. I got to put money away to make sure they do. It's kind of scary, the numbers you were throwing at us. So as a financial advisor, obviously it's your job to advise people to reach their goals, and most parents have that goal, sending their kid to college, Princeton, Yale, Harvard, wherever it happens to be.
They all start out with the Ivy Leagues, right?
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Walk me through how I can calculate how much money I'm going to need to save so that I can send my kid to the college of choice, whichever college it happens to be.
Yeah, so, you know, we met the other day and we were discussing, you know, just the fact that one of the first things you want to start with is the rising costs of college. They're just been going up every single year. It's getting more and more expensive to send your kids to school. It's becoming more and more competitive for your kids to get into certain schools. And I think that's great for the country in general, but it's hard on our pocketbooks because there's a certain amount of supply and certain number of seats available for kids. And I think that's what's led to the rising costs. If you look at nationally, it's been rising at about a 6% rate, compounding
tuition
each year. Yeah, tuition.
Or the whole college experience.
Let's just talk about college experience.
So
right?
Housing, books, food, everything they're going to need.
It's going,
beer.
It's going 6%. Up about 6% compounding each year, and that's just a huge hurdle when you're trying to plan, for the future. Because if it's going up 6% a year, you know that if you're trying to save right now. First of all, if you're trying to just keep up with the inflation of college, you have to try and earn 6% on your money, which is in this environment has been difficult.
6% a year.
Yeah, then it's a problem in the country. You know, how long can that continue to go on?
Your money's depreciating by 3%. You've got another 6% to overcome. Some might say you'd have to make 9% just to be able to make this happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's a problem. And I think a lot of parents out there have been facing having to make some really tough decisions on maybe, not allocating enough money to their retirement or making tough decisions on having to maybe, you guys probably know people that have had to sell their houses or pull equity out, especially here in San Diego where a lot of people have so much of their net worth tied up in their homes.
House. Yeah, sure.
And it just puts a lot of pressure on parents. And so what can you do, right? The best thing to do is start early. So you want to make sure that you're putting money away. The earlier you start, the better off, the better chance that you have of attaining that goal of being able to put your kids through school and have the money to be able to do it.
Well, let's talk about some of the assumptions you make here. And obviously, each one of these scenarios is going to differ greatly on the amount of years from today until the kid actually goes to college, what college they go to, rate of return,
sure,
et cetera, et cetera. But in your example here, what college did you choose?
So I chose San Diego State.
Good choice.
I think here in San Diego,
good
that makes sense. I have two parents that are both alumni there, so I thought that would be a good choice. And what we do is we take a look and we say, how much would it cost to go to school today in today's dollars? So 2012 tuition fees and miscellaneous expenses, including room and board, you're running at about $18,127 per year.
$18,000 a year, everything.
Yeah.
Everything today.
Everything in there. So if you go and you say, all right, how much is that going to if I have a 10-year-old and they're 10 today, they're going to go to school when they're 18, you've got 10 years to save, right?
Makes sense.
And so if we assume that we've got this hurdle of 6%, and we also have, a hurdle of 6% with the assumed inflation rate. And then we also assume that we're going to earn 8% on our money, which I think is fair.
Is that
over
attainable,
time.
8%?
You know, over the last 12 years, that's been tough, right? The S&P 500 has been pretty much flat since the dot-com bubble burst. But let's make an assumption and say, hey, if we're well-diversified, we hire good money managers, we're going to be able to attain that rate of return.
Well, that's where a person would turn to you, really. I mean, one, to know the numbers, but two, to hit that number, the 8% or the 7 or the 9 or, you know, whatever it happens to be. That's kind of your bag. That's where you fit into this equation.
Yeah, I keep people on – one of the things that I think I can do is keep people on track with these plans. You know, I think it's real easy to set something like this up. You start it, but it's real easy to forget about it when something comes along. So,
well, one of the big things that we saw recently where people were investing almost everything they had into real estate. And so, you know, with the old adage of diversifying, you know, this is where you're going to come in and say – okay, you want a piece of real estate, you want a piece of stock, you know, however you put the plan together, diversifies it out so that when they get to that point, they've actually still got some money left.
Yeah, and we have tools that, or there's tools that I use that can provide basically tax-free money for your college expenses. It's called a 529 plan. And what basically a 529 plan is, you put your money in and it grows tax deferred. And as long as you use that pool of money for qualified education expenses, which are outlined by the IRS, that money, all of the money that you put in, as well as the growth on that money over the, let's say, over 10 years, is going to be tax-free. So that's really a huge
529 plan that you can set up plan. Allows me to contribute tax deferred for my children's education. Okay, so break it down for me. So I got a 10-year-old now, 8 years to plan for college. College is going up 6%. You're making me 8% on my money, right? And it's costing me $18,000 a year now to go to state. 18 grand a year.
So if we look at how much would I need to put away today to achieve that goal that down the road, you would need to put a lump sum away today of $60,724.
Well, it's not a crazy number.
It's not, but it's not that many people have $60,000 lying around
on the side
right now on the side that they can put into a 529 plan for the kids. So what would that mean if you said, all right, I'm going to put aside a monthly type of savings program?
Okay.
You'd be looking at about $684 per month to achieve that goal of, and this is, by the way, this is an in-state school.
Right.
Right? And, you're still running at a pretty high cost.
Yeah, $18,000 a year all-inclusive for state is pretty low.
That seems really reasonable to me.
People go out of state. Of course, housing is probably going to be less expensive, but tuition is going to be more. So right now, $700. My kid's 10, 8 years I have to save, inflation 6%, you're making me 8, I got to put away $700 a month, roughly, which is some people's mortgage payment.
Mm-hmm.
$700 per child. You guys got two.
Mm-hmm.
It's $1,400 a month.
Some of us spend that in gas a month.
Are we starting at age zero? What age are
we
starting
at? No,
we're starting at 10. Age 10, yeah. And so obviously the earlier you start, the less money you're going to have to put away.
Makes sense.
And I always point out to my clients that if you have grandparents that are willing and able to put some money aside for the grandkids, the 529 plan is really a great way and a great tool to help out. And the more money you get in early on, the better off you're going to be, because it's going to be in there growing tax deferred for the long run.
So obviously for everybody, the scenario is different. How many years you have to plan for college, the actual expense of college, you're just guessing. We're talking about state. Maybe you can find something less expensive, maybe something more expensive. State's kind of on the low end, I would think, in terms of expense. The amount of return you're getting on your money. So basically these scenarios really needs to be personalized for everybody. And really that's where you come in as the financial advisor. Reed Matthews is with Wells Fargo Advisors here in Carmel Valley and can be reached through the helpline, 888-551-2593. Again, 888-551-2593. You run these scenarios for everybody all the time, free, can set up the 529 plan for them. Good enough. That is really good insight. Okay. When we come back, we're going to get a heated discussion of real estate versus the financial market. And obviously, we're on opposite sides of the fence there, Reed. Looking forward to that battle.
I think there's a place for both, but we'll duke it out.
Good enough when we come back.
Welcome back to ESPN 1700. It's the Real Estate Radio Hour with your host,
Ryan White,
and myself, David McKelvin. We are here with Randy Starrett, who is an asset manager for Aslan, in charge of $100 million, turning that $100 million over every 6 months. But that isn't exactly where your passion lies. You're an author.
Correct. Yeah, the $100 million you keep talking about, that's a lot of pressure. So,
I only want 1%.
Okay. So. Yeah. But my outlet is actually writing, and I've been doing it for a while. So I also do, it's an urban fantasy, dark fantasy novels that I do to kind of release some stress.
What is it? Is there anything out in the market that it's similar to? Do you draw any analogies? Anything else?
Well, I mean, there's other books that this pertains to the Book of Revelations and the Apocalypse. It's set in a little bit of the future, so it's kind of ties with that. So there's a lot of other books out there. Like The Stand from Stephen King is kind of similar.
Okay.
Similar, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it involves like fantasies of the angels and demons and having certain powers that we never realized before. So it's kind of fun because it allows me to use my imagination and do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no kidding. And we're giving away copies, right? We're giving away copies.
Yeah. I've got a book signing on Saturday at the Carlsbad Mall. So to promote that, I'll sign 5 books and the first 5 callers I'll sign on to them and we'll give them away.
And awesome. You're giving away this book here, I Am War Cry, The Horseman Chronicles.
Correct, right. Yes.
The helpline, 888-551-2593. Again, 888-551-2593. Get a hold of Randy's emotional outlet.
That's it.
Yeah, on November 17th at the Carlsbad Mall at Comics and Stuff.
Yes, from 12 to 4. Yeah.
Okay. 12 to 4.
Sounds good.
Okay. 529.
Yeah,
more questions about that,
about
huh?
The 529. I had some questions about that, and one was, you know, what if your child decides not to go to college? I mean, you've invested $600, $700 a month since age 10. Now you've got over $60,000 making you 8%, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, that's obviously one of the downsides, right? Those tax-free benefits that come with a 529 plan for qualified education expenses, they go away if you don't use them for qualified education expenses. The one nice thing is that you can change beneficiaries. So if one child decides that they're not going to school, you can transfer and change the beneficiaries to another child or even to a grandchild. So these are very flexible in that way. The other thing that I'd like to point out specifically to grandparents that are thinking about setting up these 529 plans is, well, what if they don't use these? Well, the account's going to grow tax-deferred, right? And if for whatever reason that money isn't used for school and you end up taking it out, what ends up happening is you end up paying taxes on the gains, mm-hmm. as well as an extra 10% penalty on that. But the reality is that because you had tax-deferred growth for X amount of time, that overcomes some of that penalty, believe it or not. If you kind of stacked the same investment plan, not tax-deferred, against this over a long period of time, they end up, even with the penalty, they can look very similar.
Well, I promised the listeners a heated debate about real estate market versus the financial market, but in reality, kind of want to break that down to how they merge a little bit. And I would say that's with a REIT and a TIC. Something fairly similar, kind of the merge of the two. A lot of people out there don't know what a REIT or a TIC is.
Yeah, so
that is.
So I'll talk a little bit about real estate. A REIT is a real estate investment trust, and it's basically there's private and publicly traded REITs out there, and essentially they own properties, and you, as an investor in a REIT, you can basically get access to lots of different types of properties through a REIT, and you are a partial owner, essentially, of those by owning that company or that stock. So REITs typically can trade on the stock exchange. There are also private REITs out there. But what they're really designed to do is pass through income. So they are great investments for people that are looking for an income stream because as in a REIT, let's say you have XYZ company that is renting a property or leasing a property from the REIT, there's an income stream that comes from that.
Let's hope.
Hopefully. And what happens is this REIT is just passing that income stream on to its investors. They're actually required, the REIT structure itself requires that they pass through that income.
Mm-hmm.
It's become a fairly popular way to generate income. REITs have been long-term great investments for investors. A lot of it has to do with you get access to real estate. But in a very liquid form, because you can transact in REITs on the stock exchange, buy and sell them every day if you wanted to. Whereas if you tried to buy an office building, you're not buying and selling it and trading it. There's a lot of costs that go into that. So really, they're putting together pools of money, buying properties, and then the income that's produced off that is passing through to investors.
So you can buy in a real estate investment trust and have a predicted rate of return?
You can have a predicted rate of income. So when you buy it, you know exactly how much they're paying each month or quarter or whatever it may be in the form of a dividend payment to you. And typically those have been consistent, but they can vary. They can go down. They can go up. It all depends upon how well that REIT is managing their properties and their capital.
So instead of buying Apple stock, I can keep my, I guess, influence in the real estate sector by investing in a REIT and harvest the, let's say, rental return, in your example, as my gains on my efforts. That's kind of the way it works, right?
Yeah, so, and you're getting a pre, you know, a lot of times REITs, property has been a great place to invest over the last 20 years, especially here in San Diego. But if you're getting the benefit of not only the income stream that's coming from this, but properties appreciate over the long run.
Yeah.
And so you're also getting that appreciation. You're also getting access to a diverse basket of real estate. You know, many of these REITs own, they may own office parks. They may own single-family homes. They might own condos. They could own hotels. They could own airports. I mean, they own all sorts of different types of properties.
Now, most of us know that if you own an investment, real estate investment, that you can depreciate the building. So in this real estate investment trust, when they're buying real estate, who gets to take the deduction?
Yeah, so that's you're losing that by, you know, your access to having a liquid market as well as an easy, inexpensive way to get access to that. They're doing that all inside of it, but that's also a benefit, too. You don't have any of those headaches. You're not a landlord. You're just an owner. You're a passive owner receiving that income, and they're passing that along to you. And it's a real simple way to get access.
So let's say that over a lifetime you acquire a number of pieces of real estate and you want to 1031 exchange these assets into a real estate investment trust. Is it still going to qualify as a tax deferred?
Well, what does that mean, 1031?
Well, 1031 exchange is where you can sell property, and the 1031 is a tax code that allows you to defer the income from that investment, because you're exchanging one investment of like
the capital
kind
gains
to
tax.
Defer the capital gains tax
if it's reinvested. And as I believe a REIT qualifies for that, yes?
Yes and no. That gets into a really kind of complicated, tricky area, but it could.
There are
REITs out there that would accept that type of transfer, and but usually they have. They may have huge minimums where they're only going to look at someone that's got a that's accumulated properties, let's say, of $100 million. So it's not like, okay, I own two office parks, I'm going to go to this REIT and exchange in a 1031. There are those out there. There are also not only publicly traded REITs, but there are private REITs, and some of that is available out there.
So with some exceptions, but as a concept, can be done.
It's a possibility.
Possibility. Good enough. Well, that's a great reason to contact you.
Sure, sure.
Well, earlier, Ryan, you had mentioned to get on the list to get updates about all of Aslan's projects, and that is that the projects that they're currently working on and that they're getting ready to bring to market, because of the fact there's a shortage of inventory, we're selling a lot of properties that aren't on the market. So you can call the helpline at 888-551-2593. That's the number, 888-551-2593. Leave your email address, and we will get you on that list. When we come back, we'll talk more with Randy Sterrett about how he can make an offer on any property out there. Welcome back to ESPN 1700 AM, the Real Estate Radio Hour, with your host,
Ryan White,
and David McKelvin. Randy Sterrett, acquisitions manager for Aslan, in charge of getting rid of $100 million every 6 months. What is a day in the life of Randy? Are you guys down at the auction in the morning? Are you making offers every day?
Yeah, you know, we're big group here. We've got several offices, not only in San Diego but also in Irvine. So the majority of the morning will consist of dealing with the auction side of it. There's several players in the game doing the auctions, you know, checking various things when it goes to auction, you know, if it's occupied, vacant, is it, are they informed, you know, trying to stop the sale, those kind of deals. But, you know, that's one factor that we do. I tend to do a lot of more of dealing with the people in the public, dealing with the agents, especially if they're doing a short sale, if someone's in the process of doing a short sale with the bank. Since with my background of doing the Fannie Mae and Bank of America, I'm pretty, you know, diverse in what the transaction consists of and how to do it. So it makes it easier for me, and it's easier for the person selling the home to deal with me and my knowledge to make this smooth and easy for them. And mm-hmm. So,
do you ever get home buyers, because obviously there's a lot of resources out there, that reach out to you and say, hey, can you guys go buy this property for me? And I'll buy it from you at some yield spread difference because I wasn't able to get it through the short sale or something like that, and they see that it's going to auction. Do you ever see anything like that?
I don't see anything like that. And mostly what I'm going to deal with is the agents who say, hey, Randy, I've got the seller. They're really needing to get out of it. They're in a hardship. But they need somebody like you that's cash that can close this thing quickly, present a good offer to the bank, and work with it to make it fast. Mm-hmm. And that's where I come in, play, and do those. Mm-hmm. That's where the relationships come in, because since we are strictly cash, mm-hmm. there's no issues with it. I can check the property, make sure it's what conditions it's in, how much it costs to repair, and then put it in the condition. So when I do go back on the market, those buyers that are FHA, or you know, or doing the HEP programs that they don't have the down payment, need down payment assistance, the property is in that condition to where they can do it and purchase it and not have to worry about a whole lot of competing offers,
mm-hmm.
or someone like me.
It's hard to be an agent in this market and not have a short sale that didn't go through, mm-hmm. and you see that 2 weeks before you're supposed to go to auction, you get approval, and you contact your buyer, and the buyer's gone, and you need an offer today.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you'd be a good resource for that, right? I mean,
right. I've done that. Yeah, that's what that's where it's great.
That's your bread and butter.
Yeah. Say, hey, look. You know, the only problems that we'll come into in the back end is the really hard part is when the agents aren't aware of the whole picture of the short sales. They put a price in it, you know, let's say at $400,000. Their eyes get big because they see multiple offers, and they've got these offers at $425,000, you know, $450,000 when it's listed at $400,000. They send that highest offer to the bank. Well, bank's going to use that as the value. And they're doing a disservice to the seller because if for some reason that $450,000 offer backs out, the bank's going to use that as the value, and then you're not going to see very many 450 offers. You should have been going somewhere around the 400 range where you were marked at. So the bank will see that as the value and say, hey, look, here's another offer at 400. Let's go with that. Mm-hmm. Because banks are going to do their appraisals too. And it's really – that's the cat and mouse game that you got to watch and be careful with, because someone like me, when I can get a good sense of what the value is, my offer is going to be solid, not just throwing the highest number in there to secure it and then back out when we're in escrow, mm-hmm. which is what happens a lot.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I made some pretty bold statements before we went off the air, and that is that you'll make an offer on any property that's out there. That doesn't mean to say that the offer is going to be all that attractive, is that right? I mean, but it's an offer nonetheless.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, it's going to be attractive because it's cash and quick close, or long close if necessary, and perhaps moving expenses if necessary, if it's disclosed to everybody. But got to be a spread in there. That's really what it comes down to. There's got to be a spread in there.
The key thing that I'm going to look at mostly, too, is when I hit the market, am I going to be able to sell it as well, too? There's going to be those instances where there's property just way, way out there and in the desert that only buzzards like to habitate around or something. You know, those are things that I'm...
They're all David's listening.
You were Ryan lives?
Yeah, those are something that I prefer not to work with, but, you know, so don't say every property or any property, because...
There is a disclosure in there, okay? Yeah. There's a disclosure in there.
Most
properties you'll make offers on.
Okay, I think we get it. You buy houses.
Yes.
We get it. And you're looking for 6-8% is kind of what you're hitting per property, right? Mm-hmm. That's kind of the return you're looking to hit.
Well, one of the things that comes to mind here is that a lot of times I'll run into a homeowner that says, you know what, I don't want everybody to know my business. I don't want a sign in the front yard. I don't really want this thing on the multiple listing. I don't want to run a bunch of people through here. But I think a short sale would be a great option for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what you're saying is that if somebody contacted us and said, we want to get Randy to write us an offer so we can go through the short sale process, or even an agent that comes across somebody that doesn't want to go on the market, they obviously have to disclose and list it that properly that way, that it's not going to go on the multiple listing. But you would make an offer which would allow them to go ahead and start the process of doing their short sale, submit the package to the bank, and not necessarily have all those people running through the house.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, that's what's really good about the relationship of it is, you know, you've got an agent. I mean, you're right. A lot of people don't want to have open houses and have, you know, on a weekend, spend their whole weekend, especially agents, sitting at a house watching people go through. And people that own the house don't necessarily want to be out, you know, doing their own little thing while the agents are doing their job. And they've got their lives that they want to live. You know, I come in, I've already done my research on it before I even check out the property and go in and look at it. I go in, look at it all of 15 minutes or 20 minutes, depending on whatever it takes, do what I need to do to see, inspect the inside of it, and we're done. And then, you know, I'm cash, I'm closed quick, and we're out of here. And, you know, you don't have to go through that headache, that hassle of what it takes on some of those, because it can be long and a very tedious
process.
Sounds
like a great service for those that want to bow out respectfully mm-hmm. without that black mark, you know, through all their neighbors, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I can see how that would be stressful. $100 million is a lot of money to be dealing with. Your outlet here. I understand there's 7 of these books coming. One out, but 6 more coming.
Yeah, I'm in the process of doing the second one. The idea is to have 7 books in the series.
And it's the Horseman Chronicles, right?
Correct.
That's what it's called?
Yeah, it's the series is the Horseman Chronicles, yes. It's a playoff of the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. So it's a, you know, there's, of course, that end of it. You know, my growing up in Texas and with the whole Bible Belt, you know, there's a lot of fear factor that my family put into me with the Book of Revelations, and so it's kind of stuck in with me.
Okay.
So with that being said, it's one of those that in my back of my head that was always there.
So is this one of your fear factors? He brought in this picture of this is Sage, right?
Yeah. Sage is that drawing. I've got a couple of guys that are artists, the comic artists that we discussed doing a graphic novel of I Am Warcry, and so as part of that, he drew this with Sage to show me and give me an idea of what the work can be done on it. So we're in the process of doing that. This particular poster that I brought in, I'm doing the book signing on Saturday. The artist Mike Lindman, he's going to be there as well. He's going to sell some of his artwork that he's done. But we're going to raffle this poster off, and the winner of the raffle, I'll sign the poster, he'll sign it. There's only 2 prints of it right now, so it'll be a limited edition print.
And pretty cool shot. What's on her hands there? Kind of like a Wolverine with one finger?
Well,
but a whole lot better looking.
What I told him is I said, read the book and draw something that you interpret the character. And so that she's got a weapon that she uses out of her hand.
She does.
And so that was his interpretation of the drawing.
So you're going to be at the Carlsbad Mall signing copies. It's on November 17th.
From noon to 4, yes.
Noon to 4. Okay, good enough. And we are still giving away copies. The helpline number, 888-551-2593. That's the number. 888-551-2593, giving away copies of Randy's book or your pen name.
Yeah, the pen name is Kel Reese. That's my kid's middle name.
And so, I can get the book at?
You can get it on Amazon. You can get it at Barnes & Noble. You can go to my website, www.thehorsemanchronicles.com. It's plural. So I have copies of that as well there. But you can Amazon, Barnes & Noble, my website. Or the book signing.
Or call in. For a free copy, 888-551-2593. Again, 888-551-2593.
It's also on digital, so you can download it for your
download
Nook.
Download it. Excellent. Excellent. Makes sense.
Well, let's not forget, though, we've actually got a list that we're also giving away, this list of homes that are not on the market yet. And I'm looking at this list right now, and I've got Encinitas, I've got Vista, I've got Carlsbad, I've got Chula Vista, Escondido, Imperial Beach, you name it, it's on this list. And if you're a buyer out there looking for a property and you can't find what you're looking for, it may actually be on this list.
That's just the San Diego list. You know, we also have properties up in Orange County, Riverside, and L.A. too. So they just get a hold of me if they need something up in that area or go to the helpline, then I'll get them something up there too.
Get them something. Excellent. And Reed, you're giving away a college education. Or at least on how to plan for one, right?
Yeah, maybe a couple solutions.
Couple solutions.
Yeah, I think I can help people out with at least getting pointed in the right direction and looking at all your options and coming up with a plan, and look forward to helping anyone that I can.
And it doesn't have to be through a REIT or TIC. That's just what we have to talk about. But you're well-versed in all of the financial products out there and can put people into whatever necessary to hit that 8% or whatever the goal happens to be.
Absolutely.
Fill in that equation.
You know, I do everything. I'm even a licensed commodities broker and certified financial planner. So I'm doing a little bit of everything, and look forward to helping anyone that I can.
If you're a local guy here in the community, willing to go out and meet with people, necessary to walk through that same illustration about putting away $700 a month, depending on where the kid's going to school or how much school's going to cost.
Yeah, and I can even customize that down to, you tell me what institution or what college you want your kid to participate in, and I can run a scenario that looks at what that might cost for your kids to go to school.
And you do this for free.
Yeah, that's all free. So even when I sit down with a client and I do a financial plan for them, everything is free. You know, cost doesn't come into the equation until someone actually signs up with me and we start to put something actually in place and transact business. So people can feel free to take advantage of my knowledge and and all the planning that I have available. There's no cost to that, and hopefully I can earn the business, and they'll sign up.
Sounds like a good way to go. We all have college to plan for.
Yeah, you can get all this information by calling us at the real estate hotline at 888-551-2593. That's the number, 888-551-2593.
Thanks for listening. Talk to you next time.